This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10. For you and three of your friends, and you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh.
Applebee's.
If I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
Oh, I'm getting a nosebleed.
Probably my friend Jeremy. Okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question,
yeah,
Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
So okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finediningpodcast. We watched I Still Believe, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
I want to see cats!
I wanted to yuck everybody, and I didn't!
Hey.
I'm just killing.
Disgusting. Okay,
watch this.
I love
Bazinga. Jesus Christ.
Bazinga. Losers, in other words.
Oh, why don't you want to get in the bathtub?
Bazinga. It's Sicario.
You got me straight tripping,
bro. Are you familiar with, like, Calvinism as a concept?
My butthole's tingling all the time.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I guess.
How's your body feel right now?
Everything's good.
Are you okay?
Everything's good. Mellow.
That's not a coronavirus symptom, so I wouldn't be worried about it.
No, it is.
Oh,
it's a new one.
CDC, yeah, they keep changing the narrative. Good grief.
I know. They're so consistent.
Fauci. Well, we're here to have good Christian fun. From our butthole to yours. Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the movies, music, and entertainment made for and made by usually Christians. But we're not here to make fun of you or to make you go to church. We're just here to have fun and have a little giggle, have a laugh, as James Corden would say. But we're here to have good Christian fun.
Yes, we are.
And the topic for today is a movie called I Still Believe, one of the last movies ever released in movie theaters in the United States of America. Forever, potentially. It was released.
No, movie theaters are coming back. I can't wait to
go. Are you going to go? Have we talked about this?
We did, yeah. I think I would actually go if I knew for sure I was like one of two people in a theater.
Are you going to go, Matthew?
I don't know. I don't think so. I can't, not in the next year. There's no way I'm going to even go as soon as they're like, it's fine. Like, I feel like once they say that it's like absolutely fine to go, what's the difference between that day and the day before when it wasn't fine? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to need a lot of time to like make sure that I'm okay with this. But I think they should keep releasing the movies the way they are right now. On demand, you paid like $20 to watch King of Staten Island or whatever, Or I would do that for Fast 9 if they did it right now. I would be watching Fast 9.
I would rather wait for Fast 9, if I'm being honest.
I would go to a drive-in theater. I feel like I'm looking forward to that.
That
feels cool.
Wait, what if we do a drive-in theater for Fast 9, but at the end of the movie, you have to drive through the screen? That's the only way you can get out.
I was just about to say, it seems like that would be the most dangerous place to see a Fast and Furious movie, because I already feel like a lunatic when I'm getting out of there, just like high-fiving everyone that I see.
Oh, I know. I was so amped up the last time I saw it. Well, you've heard from him a little bit. Let's introduce our very special guest today. Friends and folks, he's been on the show before. He's a friend. You may have heard him on Comedy Bang Bang or on How Did This Get Played. He's a comedian. We love him. Everybody, give it the hell up for Matt Apodaca!
Yay! I'm so happy to be here with such nice people. I'm so excited. This was like, I was looking forward to this truly all weekend. You know, Garfield hates Mondays.
Oh my gosh.
Typically, so do I. And I was like, I can't wait to see my pals.
Well, by the way, happy Garfield's birthday to you, sir.
Thank you very much, good sir.
We love the orange cat on this podcast. We're glad to see him turn another year.
We stand the Orange King.
Yeah, we're doing a few Garfield Second Service episodes coming to you on Patreon this Christmas, this Thanksgiving, this Halloween. We're doing all the specials.
Holidays with Garfield.
Wow.
And I think that would be a lot of fun.
What's that?
I think that would be a lot of fun. And I think also, speaking of looking at it right now, I think it would be fun to have every guest we've had that has a pet cat to bring that kitty. And we feed that cat like a cat safe lasagna. And we talk about that. And then we ask the cat, you know, what's your favorite Garfield panel? Was it the one right after 9/11? Or was it, you know, the one where
was it
John
the one where
drinks come?
One where John,
way ahead of you there, Kevin. Sorry about
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah. No, that's fair. No, I'm proud of you that you got there first.
Thank you. I did. And I think that would be kind of a fun little cozy holiday time.
Yeah, no, I was a big fan of Garfield and Friends growing up as a kid, that television series.
Yeah.
I liked even U.S. Acres.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but respect for my young Sheldon, which was that egg with legs on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him?
Legs. Yeah, that thing creeped me out.
The thing about Garfield and Friends and what was the other one? Acres?
U.S. Acres.
U.S. Acres?
Yeah.
Looking back on that, it doesn't seem like that was for children. Like, it's so weird that, like, any kid would like that to
no,
me. Like,
it's strange.
None of it is, it's like, it's,
I mean,
it's not that
Kevin
it's like
Porter?
Adult humor. It's just, yeah, I guess it's just like, I mean, but this is also a kid who I loved Gary Shandling when I was a child. So I don't know, like, what is correct
for
a kid to like.
And when I wasn't reading Garfield and Calvin and Hobbes, I was getting into Dilbert. So
sure.
Another...
And you like Dilbert more now. I think.
Yeah. I'm not so much into the strip as much as I am the creator and the things he has to say to this country specifically.
And his beefy arms.
Good grief. Platform.
I know some guys, you don't want to be weird about anyone's bodies, but some guys have muscles, but they just look like they're in the wrong place. Like it's off on a grid where it's like,
wait, I have to look this up.
I guess
he looks
in shape,
like his muscles are drawn on.
Yeah. It looks like CGI'd poorly or something.
Yeah.
But it's
Scott
real.
Adams, right? Okay.
It's real life.
He looks like a PS2 era, like, graphics of a man.
And that's what's called cross promotion, where we get into how did this get played stuff.
Yeah, he kind of has like a Bezos feel, like kind of a normal looking man that decided, like, now that I'm 65, I want to be hot.
Yeah.
And, like, just got bulked up and, like, hairless.
And I think, you know, like, everyone, you know, have the body you want to have the body that's right for you, that you think that is going to be, like, make you happier. But I also just think that there are some people who are buff for absolutely no reason. Like, there's no reason that Jeff Bezos should be buff. There's no reason that Dilbert Man should be buff. I got a list. There's a lot of people who I think are like, why are you this? Why are you buff?
It Carrot Top. No purpose. There was no reason for Carrot Top to
Carrot
be
Top,
buff for sure.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of his work too, but Ben Stiller shredded for absolutely no reason. Is in like, not even, but it looks good on him.
I have to give a few reasons.
Well, yeah, that dude's kind of
are
handsome.
They your body parts, Caroline?
But like, I remember when I was like a teenager, I was like, why is he shredded? He's so just ripped.
Yeah.
Good for Ben.
You meet the parents when he comes out, you're like, what?
I think the Kumail stuff is upsetting as well, if I'm being honest.
Everyone seems like really upset about Kumail. Like,
I love
like
it.
Every comedian I've heard about it, like even joking about it, they're like, it's just, why? Like, he's just ruining it. It's stupid.
It's, to me, it rules.
I think for some people, it okay, feels good. Like a turncoat move.
Diversity of opinion.
In these unjacked times, it's important for us to be jacked.
It's jacked to be jacked.
Matt, thanks for coming back on the show, buddy. It's been like 2 years.
I know. I'm so happy to see you guys, and I already know that this is going to be so much fun because we're not talking about the thing that we're going to talk about. We're having a blast, and I just can't wait to just keep hanging. This is so fun.
So yeah. Much more fun to come.
Well, new drop.
That's, you know, that won't be the one you use. Like, that's not even nearly disgusting enough.
It's good just to have it, though.
You know what I do, right, Caroline? Backups. When I edit, I do just like keep a little library.
You have a little folder.
Clip you out as Caroline, and it's just like.
One of actually, these nights, you know, your door is going to be unlocked, and I'm just going to sneak in there.
Let me see if I can.
I'm
going to
open
right
your
now.
Computer. Password is Garfield's.
Can you see my screen right
feet
now?
Are cool. And
I can see your screen. Yeah.
It up.
Okay, so here's the Caroline folder.
Is this the
wow.
You name them?
Yes.
What's the TJ Mill? Oh my god!
This is
oh
good.
Oh my god!
A lot of these are.
Can you play
I
the
will
Harry
say,
Styles one?
Shocking to read.
I think I can play the Harry Styles one real quick.
What's more like Groby?
here's Harry Styles.
I'd take Harry Styles for example. Not a person, and I would take him. All right.
Oh my god. You're proud of that though.
I like that one. That one's good.
The secret is you're proud of that.
Well that's super messed up and I don't like it that you do that and I feel like
clean up on aisle, but
I feel
that's
like
good.
I have some legal rights that I will be discussing with my lawyer to figure out how to...
I mean,
to,
not after this folder leaks, I guess.
Lay hands on this folder.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if this folder leaked?
Oh, my goodness.
What if these were just your ringtones?
I'd be
like
done.
Your different little text tones?
No,
wait up, but I'll bet.
I'll never have a ringtone ever again. I'll never have another ringtone again. These would only be like alarm sounds, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alarm sounds?
Mm-hmm. I've turned off all ringing on my phone, and then I've given certain people in my life who I might need to hear from in an emergency, like, ringing privileges. Ringtone?
Like yes. Kumail.
Like Kumail. He's like, if he wants to tell me that he's more jacked somehow.
Yeah. Ring-a-ding-ding.
Like, yeah, like,
congrats,
breaking news.
Buddy.
Some
yeah.
good news.
Oh, man. I miss having a custom ringtone. That
gracious.
Was cool.
Now, Matt, I mean, before we get into the movie,
yes.
I would like to ask, just in terms of expertise, and then maybe this will be fodder for a future subject. I know we talked about a little bit in passing, but the way that faith is represented in video games, you are the producer / unofficial
yeah.
third co-host of How Did This Get Played, the podcast about strange, weird, bizarre games with Heather Ann Campbell and Nick Weiger.
That's right.
By
yeah.
the way, side note, Matt, we need to talk about Animal Crossing at some point.
Oh,
we did
yes,
hear you talk
please.
About it on that episode, and I think we share a passion.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, I would love to discuss this further. I would love it. I mean, you're loving your cat right now. That's very nice to see.
But
my Animal Crossing.
But the intersection of faith and video games, it's happened before. Are there any like notable examples that you've encountered, even like researching for future topics on that show?
There's this game called Bible Adventures that we were sort of interested in doing, but we just, for some reason, that fell apart. And we just never got to it. There was this game that I was talking to you about, Kevin,
oh, that's
called
right.
Dance Praise, that is like a DDR game set to Christian music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if this is ever safe to do, I'm sure we'll be knocking on your doors to come do that. Because we have the pad. It's under my desk at work. Like, it's just,
oh, my
like,
gosh.
Not
I love
used.
That, yeah.
But somebody was bringing this to my attention the other day. And at the end of Assassin's Creed 2, the boss is the Pope, like a real Pope, not a fake Pope.
Whoa.
Like the period
like a historical
Pope. Yeah, the Pope from that time period reflected in the game is the boss.
Whoa.
And you fight him. You have a fist fight with him.
Wow. There also a video game where you are like, I have the image of like you're next to Jesus on the cross or something like that.
Oh, man.
You're talking about
you play Jesus.
No, it's
right?
A Jesus walking simulator that hasn't come out yet.
Oh, yeah, it's not out yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it based on the song?
Yes. And yeah, Kanye narrates the whole thing.
Kanye's big project.
Yeah. No, the oh gracious, what's it called? It's the Jesus Walking Simulator. I know we watched it on the show. I Am Jesus Christ is what it's called. It's not out yet, but it will be out on Steam at some unspecified
and you play Jesus
point in the future.
It, right?
And wow. You are literally Jesus. But you know what?
You like heal people and stuff.
If you get creative enough in Animal Crossing and The Sims, you can be Jesus on that if you want to.
You can lead a small movement.
Make the Garden of Gethsemane on your island. What's stopping you? Right?
I've got way too many non-believers on my island. Like, none of them are listening to my
Tom looks agnostic.
They're not there to hear the good word. I just did a little research, and the Pope that is depicted in Assassin's Creed 2 is Pope Alexander the VI.
I'm guessing he wasn't a good one.
No. Rodrigo Borgia, I believe is his given name.
Borgia.
But, yeah, I've not played that game, but now knowing this, I want to see what that looks like because that's probably crazy.
Beat up the Pope. You know, that's how the end of Spotlight ends as well.
Really?
Yeah, the Michael Keaton movie. Batman beats up the Pope.
Well, so he is Batman in this also.
Yeah, that's the twist.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it won Best Picture. Can you believe it?
I was just thinking if two popes was like Fight Club, where there was actually one pope, but he had a split personality.
I want you to hit me as a hothead as you can.
You guys must have talked about this to death, but like, there's been a lot of pope stuff recently. Two popes, you got Young Pope, and then that other, the sequel to that series.
The New Pope, yeah.
Is a Pope Renaissance going on.
We haven't touched...
You think it's because we're looking for good leaders, father figures that we're missing in this time?
Probably.
I'd say it has more to do with Scandal, which starred Olivia Pope.
Played
by Kerry Washington. That's what kicked it off.
So, I gotta just give it up, because that rules. That was great. I'm very happy with that.
Give it up.
That's Scandal. Great. I think Scandal was a lot of fun.
I've not seen it, but I guess now I have no choice and I must.
Well, okay, I'm going to repeat something I know I've said before elsewhere, but her catchphrase on that show, because she was like a crisis manager, so she'd go in and like if someone was in broiled in a scandal or something, hence the name of the show, after it was done or when she was like giving orders to the rest of her staff, she would always say on the phone, "It's handled." But I think it's stupid that she didn't say, "It's scandaled."
That is dumb.
That's what the show's called.
That's what she should have said. And now I consider Olivia Pope to be a false prophet, and I will not support.
That said, look for Shonda Rhimes' 5 new podcasts coming out on iHeartRadio soon, I believe. I think she did sign an overall deal with them. So congrats to her.
Congrats.
Diversify the port, Shonda.
Congrats. Shonda Land.
Caroline, any questions before we take a break?
Any questions?
Any questions for me, for Matt?
I will answer any questions. Thank you.
Yeah, I do have a question. Matt, have you created or grown or baked anything or anything like that that you've enjoyed?
So
during quarantine, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a great question because I'm not a known baker. I'm not someone that has made a sweet treat in my life. Even in the course of the quarantine, a couple weeks ago, I made cookies for the first time. Ooh. I made brownies for the first time.
Wait, what kind of cookies,
first
Matt?
Time?
They were like peanut butter cookies, just like truly just like a peanut butter base, like just sort of quick bake thing. But I went nuts the other day. I'd never done this before. I like bought stuff to do this because I didn't have like a baking dish or like even like a bowl big enough to mix in. So I like went to the store and I bought all this stuff and I baked I made a flan. And cause I was craving flan and I was like just thinking about it a lot. And I was like, I guess I could just go get this from like a restaurant or something. But then I was like, how hard could this be? It's only like three things. Mm-hmm. And It is not hard at all. It was very easy to do. I was intimidated because of the texture. I was always like, how do you even do that? But right. It wasn't hard at all.
Baked and stuff.
Yeah, and I only fucked it up a little bit. And
a first time and basically a beginner baker, that's amazing.
Yes, I watched a couple of YouTube videos and I read the directions as best as I could. But it still got a little messed up in the flipping. You have to sort of flip it.
Oh, right.
Because, you know, you put the sugar, you melt the sugar first, and you put that at the bottom of the pan, and then you put the mixture, it's like eggs, evaporated milk, condensed milk, and vanilla extract. And
what are, like, common mistakes you should avoid when you're making a flan?
You know, I think part of it was I didn't let it sit long enough. I think I was just too excited to go for it. I put it in the fridge straight away. And it kind of just got messed up. And I will say, I also did spill some of it from mixing and taking it and putting it into the oven. I spilled about, like, I spilled a good few drops of it, I'll say.
He reduced the flan.
Yeah. So, I mean, I should have, it was, what was funny is that it was sitting on the dish was sitting on a baking tray that I could have easily just slid into there, no spilling at all. And then, of course, I took it off the baking tray. I was like, I'll just put it straight in and just spilled.
Splish, splash.
Yeah, like a good chunk of it. Time. Yeah, but
I'm so impressed. I'm really proud of you. That's so cool.
Thank you.
And I feel like that's that is how baking should start for everybody. Is like, I'm craving
out of
this.
Sheer like
I need
necessity.
To make it right now.
Yeah, that's truly. I thought about it all weekend, and then I was just like, I guess I'm just going to go to the store and do this, and then amazing. Just went and did it. And it only took like an hour to make.
It only took an hour?
Yeah, I mean, you have to let it set for, I think, a little longer. But like mixing and then you bake it for an hour, like it was not a long process at all.
Yeah, custardy things scare me. Like anything where the egg is like really sensitive is where I get like worried.
Yeah, but
like
that's the thing.
US
I was
Acres?
Like, yes.
Where the egg is really sensitive.
The egg is sensitive or a nerd.
Yeah, that was the I did sort of, you know, before I put it in the oven, I was sort of making fun of the egg, and the egg did get a little upset.
Oh,
so,
and that's right. Jumped the bowl.
Yeah.
We're saying some sort of not PC things about the egg.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was like, oh,
the egg's
you and your
little
soft shell, what are you, some
snowflake.
Sort of... Yeah, exactly. A snowflake. So sensitive.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. Congratulations.
Thank you. I loved it, and I'm going to keep making it because I wanted to make it perfect. I'm obsessed with it now, but I realized the danger I could be in if I just make flan whenever I want it. You can't do that.
Listen, start a movement. Make it, you know, the new diet is flan only.
Yeah, you're right.
Made by Matt. You got to have it.
Flan
it's
going to
turn your life around.
You know?
You're going to finally unlock the 99% of the brain that you don't use most of the day because you don't have enough egg in your diet. Like, get this in you.
I mean, this is the only... That's the only motivation I needed. I'm just going to do it. Flan only. Soft food from now on.
That's beautiful. Well, you know what? We've talked about Matt's flan. Now it's time to talk about a movie in which God has a flan for us all. Let's take a break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun.
Oh, boy.
A flan for us all.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now... Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of... taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now. And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The new movie coming out.
I know you get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that
right.
can kind of propel me into
to feel
like,
as incredible to, as you could feel.
To exercise more, mm-hmm. to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that. And then
good
going,
brain.
Going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry, there's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GoodChristianFun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/GoodChristianFun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
The
I
first
agree.
Month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's BetterHelp.com/GoodChristianFun.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive back into the topic. Come on, let's go. I still believe.
I still believe.
So this is
what
the
movie.
What a movie. So this is, if you're interested, dear listener, it is streaming on Hulu right now. It's up there
for
just
free. I mean, you don't have to pay a dime.
Yes.
I mean, if you're already paying your Hulu subscription,
is that
you're
privileged
ready to go.
Position? You don't have to pay a dime as long as you have this $12.99 a month subscription that you're mooching off of your friend.
I guess you have
perhaps.
To have $12. Yeah, but he loves to do it. He doesn't mind. He's so generous. He'll just remind you about it all the fucking time.
Oh. Okay, just a little backstory, Matt. I did graciously give the Ely household my Hulu.
He hates to bring this up.
Username and password. Here's what it is. Here's what it is. It's the fact that you took a video or no, you were just looking at the screen when I put in my password into the screen, mm-hmm. into yeah. my username.
Oh, this is what makes you upset.
Yes. It's a violation of privacy. I was
also,
doing a nice
no,
thing.
No, I didn't do that. Our friend Tim did. You're just misremembering.
No. That
I said your password on the podcast. That was my crime.
No. In the moment, no. The Tim thing was y'all all wanted to play Mario Party.
We're going way back.
Punched in my credit card number and he did take a full video of it and send it to me later with all my credit card info attached to it.
That is really funny.
It's very funny. It's one of the funniest things a friend has done
to me. Yeah.
But no, this was years before, and no, Caroline saw my password
I'm
and then screamed it in front. It was at the old house.
It was hilarious.
And Yeah, but you know what? It has some emotional consequences to me. That's all I'll say. That's all I'll say. But anyway.
Just say it's somewhat related to that orange cat, right? Or no, it's not.
No, it's not. Or no, it's yes, not. It is. Anyway, I've since changed all my passwords. That password I don't use for anything anymore.
Kevin, we have an orange cat connection. I just realized for a long time, my username was Pookie2014. Pookie was the name of Garfield's
little bear.
Little bear, teddy bear.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know that
was
your...
I guess we're not that different after all.
You and me, we're not so different.
Just two Garfield-loving, Wikipedia-reading...
That's where you lose
jocks.
Me. Anyway, the movie is streaming on Hulu, much like Amazing Grace. So if it's a Sophie's choice of how to spend your night, I Still Believe versus Amazing Grace, the Aretha Franklin documentary. I just say vote your conscience, as Ted Cruz would say at the RNC.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in these times, you should watch I Still Believe.
So a little background, Matt.
Yes.
And then a little background for the listener as well. This is another Irwin Brothers joint. They were the minds behind the hit I Can Only Imagine, a movie that came out 2 years ago.
You saw that, right, Matt?
It was in my top 10, and it sat firmly at number one. After Parasite.
I'm sorry I didn't get any Oscars.
Yeah, but you didn't think the central metaphor of I Can Only Imagine worked, right?
That was, you know what? That's what gave it the edge, is that the central metaphor of that movie did work for me.
So that movie comes out starring Dennis Quaid and like some other Broadway kids and whatever. Huge hit, makes 86 mil, and is like super profitable for them.
Really?
Yeah.
Huge hit.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid was in it.
Also the minds behind the Patricia Heaton vehicle Mom's Night Out, which we've also talked about.
Oh yeah,
we
did watch that. Oh man, that was so dismal. That movie made me so sad.
That one was a true bummer to watch, actually.
It's supposed to be like a comedy, but it's very like it's very sexist.
Yes.
And sad,
sort of so. Like the realm of like the mom's movies where they're doing things
like
moms shouldn't be doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Bad
like going
moms.
To dinner.
These moms are so
friends.
Bad. Although, wait, I will say, I did go to a matinee of the first Bad Moms movie in La Cañada, and I was sitting next to a lady. We were in like the recliner seats, so we weren't like right next to each other, but the person to my immediate right was a lady who was so into the movie and like snapping and going, mm-hmm. Like there's a point in the movie where Mila Kunis is making her big emotional speech. And she says, her character says, you know, the truth of it is, we're all bad moms. And the lady next to me goes, that's right. And then afterwards, she said, I had a lot of fun watching the movie with you. And I said, I had a lot of fun watching the movie with you. And we had
a
very nice
exchange. Like having a little bit of a discourse throughout the movie. So Kevin, were you also snapping a little bit or going,
no,
you go, girl?
I would not appropriate that woman's culture. I was just respectfully going
a little weird.
Like this.
Yes.
I love that.
I affirm this.
Give it up.
So I Still Believe, based on Jeremy Camp, a prominent CCM worship leader, musician's life. So I think the
Jeremy Camp is so big, for those who don't know, that even I know his name.
Yes.
Before.
And then just for a little bit of movie background, I think they were looking to repeat the formula of I Can Only Imagine, which is like, do a dramatic movie that's based on real events. In the case of I Can Only Imagine, it's Bart Miller from Mercy Me writing that song that is omnipresent, I'm sure, in like department stores across the country, and not just like Chick-fil-A's and Hobby Lobbies, but also do that. Take current like real life events, fictionalize them, and make that like the central story of the movie, and then cast like secular associated actors in that part and make it very music oriented. And I think it probably would have worked if not for the deadly coronavirus that did incur a lockdown in our country.
Oh, you think this would have been a big success?
I think it would have been the same as I Can Only Imagine. And the reason why is because the Friday that it came out, it was the number one movie in the country, which I think is we've talked about it, but it is a very damning statistic, because that means like as things were really starting to get real for the world, there was a group of citizens that did have a Venn diagram overlap
for the faithful few,
for the core audience of I Still Believe, that said, you know what? we're going to go see a movie tonight and not give him the fear. And you know this is true because on Jeremy Camp, the real guy on Jeremy Camp's Instagram.
Jeremy Cramp?
Jeremy Cramp. That's him in his older age. That'll be his nickname. He did post a graphic boasting about it being the number one movie and the 99% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes and said, "Thanks to everyone who went out yesterday to support the film. I know times are crazy and uncertain right now, but we should never be controlled by fear. Stay healthy." Oh my. And remember, God is in control. Love you guys.
Whoa.
And then the next day he did post another thing saying faith over fear. So fear was a real, like, guys, we can't give it in. Fear was a very amorphous boogeyman at the start of the global pandemic.
Yeah.
For a lot of conservative Christians.
I feel like it was like the dog whistle of like, this is basically mind control. Yeah. So if you resist it, you're smart. I feel like Jeremy Camp also had the same hair disease that Scott Stapp had, which unfortunately is called Gumby Head.
Well, Scott Stapp had luscious locks back in the day. You're talking about the Creed front man. Yeah, right there. That's Jeremy Camp, Caroline.
Oh, wow. He wants to shape to a point.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, so this was like, it was probably, yeah, going to be pretty successful.
Yeah, for its market.
Probably kind of is, yeah, the way it is.
But then they did ultimately pivot, and they put it out on like VOD for like $20 just to rent it, and then thankfully it was on Hulu for streaming a few short months after that.
I got to kick it off by saying that the casting in this movie is stunning. It's just
Matt, do you amazed. Like Riverdale? Are you familiar with Mr. Appa's ovure?
You know, I've not seen Riverdale, but I was sort of thinking while I was watching it that this kid, he could be in stuff. I didn't know that he was. I didn't look into him either. But so he's on the show.
He is the he is the titular Riverdale.
He's Riverdale. Yeah.
He's Mr. Riverdale. He's hot.
Archie.
He's hot Archie.
Really?
Yeah, and he has red hair in the show.
That's great
he
for him.
He is so famous.
Really?
Matt, he is so famous.
So, yeah, you're going to have to just tell me all about this because, like, I mean, I think I've maybe heard Jeremy Camp's name.
The feeling I remember about Jeremy Camp was like he was his name was on all the slides for like the lyrics for the worship set that we were doing in church. Like it felt like almost every other song was written by Jeremy Camp that we sang in the 2000s when I was going to church all the time.
He pretty much rose to prominence. Yeah. Like he started his career in 2000 basically.
Okay.
And this is when CCM, as was known before, was like, it was pop, it was rock, it was DC talk, newsboy stuff. And then it started transitioning into, that's not as viable and like as market saturated. Now it's going to need to be worship. So it's not like a rock song that happens to be about God. It's like the most successful people are going to be people writing songs expressly for worship and church services. So Jeremy Camp was right at the, you know, at the bottom floor of that stuff and then rose to the top with that. So he was definitely at the forefront of that sort of Christian music movement, which meant that like a lot of the songs are just so omnipresent in people's memories from that generation, because even if you didn't know it was him. And you could see like a teeny tiny little like song credit songwriting title at the bottom of the slide for like whatever church worship service that you were at. But what you didn't know is the sort of self-mythologizing backstory all of it, which
I did not know that.
And I don't know how much it like actually affected his
career.
I don't know. I've no sense of it because to me, like, worship leaders are so anonymous in nature, because it's just like, because it's so it feels like a factory. It feels like they are just like a vessel of a factory of music. It's not like, here's my perspective on the world and here's like the colors and the lens through which I see like God or our relationship with faith. It's just like, and we lift our head. Like, it's just, you're just always going to be functioning in those generalities.
I'm like questioning if I've seen him. Like, and that seems like, that's going to seem like such an odd thing to sort of offer up. But like, because I didn't grow up very religious. We talked about this before, but like, I don't know. I'm just remembering that, like, because my uncle was pretty involved, like, in church stuff and, like, church services, and but I guess it wouldn't be the same. I probably made the same mistake last time, is that, like, because my family was Catholic, but they would go to, like, these, like, big, like, church events at, like, the Anaheim Convention Center. I could bet you that that's, I don't know if I saw him perform, but I bet you that's where I maybe know the name, perhaps, yeah. But who knows. Part of this movie was also my life story.
And isn't that beautiful? Well, part of this movie is truly Caroline's life story, because, Caroline, where'd you go to school?
I went to school in Murrieta, like, minutes away from the Christian college where he meets his soon-to-be ex-wife.
Wow.
Ex-wife?
That's like such a
divorce.
That's not very nice.
Gracious.
But
I guess you're not wrong. Like, that's such a funny mistake.
But I, this is what was, like, blowing my damn mind the entire movie. And Kevin and I kind of watched this over Zoom. And
we had a great time watching it over Zoom. It was
how
very
often
fun.
I brought it up. But, like, the geography of the places that they were hanging out or doing things was so funny, because the place that college is in Murrieta, which is just, like, a suburban desert neighborhood. Like, it's not nice. There's not bodies of water everywhere to go hang out in. The funny thing about that is the campus actually has natural hot springs there, and they never go there, but they do go to some sort of, like, Gulf of Mexico harbor.
Constant.
They go to the beach that's definitely the Atlantic many times. Like, there's one scene where they're driving, like, the highway, and you see houses on stilts, like, because they're in a swampland, which is not...
Yeah, this movie was shot in Mobile, Alabama.
Broke my brain.
This was not shot on location in Murrieta. It was in Mobile, Alabama.
The place that she goes for a run or he goes for a walk is legit, like, an hour drive over mountains to get to, like, that beach that they talk about. Anyway, that was fun. But I did feel deeply connected to him in that moment.
One thing I found is KJ Apa and Britt Robertson, who does play the famous ex-wife. Gosh, no, I don't want to be mean.
I don't want to be mean about that.
She plays Melissa in the movie. Like, this is not their first rodeo. This is a second collab.
Really?
Between those two?
They were love interests for each other in a little film you may have heard of called A Dog's Purpose.
Oh, wow.
They were... So if you recall, wait, I'll show it on the screen.
So they're sort of like the new Drew and Sandman.
Yeah, Hepburn and Tracy, baby. Oh, yeah. Drew and Sandman. Yeah, so this is them in period clothes. And
that is
funny.
Also, ignore the other tabs you might see on screen. Those are just jokes. I'm just kidding.
I feel like that's so sad, because Britt Robertson, I feel like the roles that I remember her playing were Girl Boss, and she was, like, the girl in Tomorrowland. She's, like, the protagonist in that movie.
That's right.
And both of those characters are, like, really, like, cool and, you know, rebellious and, like, sassy, and Girl Boss is a whole other story. I don't love that. But anyway, I'm just sad to hear she's, like, gone into, like, the milquetoast girl in the movie.
Yeah, but she can swerve out of it, maybe. Wait, Caroline, did I tell you I met KJ?
When?
I met KJ Apa when I was working at Funny or Die.
Oh, well, you met a lot of people when you're working at Funny or Die.
Wait,
when I say met, you walked by them in the highway.
No, I was in a general meeting with him. It was me, him, and like four other people. And it was just a nonsense shoot and he was very sweet. This is like 3 years ago, so he was 20 or 19 or however old he was.
God, and he's this young too?
He's 23 super years young. Old currently. So yes, he's a young man. He's a very young man.
Matt, I'm sorry.
I know. Hey, lest we ever forget, George Harrison was 27 when the Beatles broke up. He was 27 years old.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that sucks.
But KJ seemed like a very sweet guy. We talked about Riverdale stuff. He's like, oh yeah, the fist, yeah, on the set, because he's from New Zealand.
New Zealand.
He said like, yeah, it was a little bit like summer camp, and he was talking about like, aww, I think you know, hooking up wise, it was quite the scene. That
oh,
first
it was
season.
Like a horny
sick
summer camp.
That fucking rules.
That's right. No, yes, of course it rules.
That does rule. Yeah, if you get any more details on that and you want to share them, send them my way. That'd be
yeah,
cool.
I'll put them in the Zoom
to
chat.
The Google Drive, yes.
But yeah, that was a. I just like the. This is what I mean by the casting was stunning. Like him, which was like a weird choice, but he was pretty good in it, I guess. And then Britt, and then Shania Twain is the mom.
Man. I feel like Christian. Dee, 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 savior. Let's go, God.
Let's go, God. And then Gary Sinise is the father.
Yeah, damn Lieutenant Dan.
A Reverend Dan, sir. He's Reverend Dan.
Reverend Dan. Dan. No. Reverend.
Just a lot of shocks at every moment.
Okay, and I will say, like, and we made this joke while watching Caroline. I'm gonna share the screen again because I think you can see in this image here on the right, I think they were leaning into the Star Is Born of it all down
it's
to the
all
marketing.
I could think about.
This,
oh,
look at this poster.
God.
This poster
so right.
could not be more similar. We're looking at the 27x40 poster from the movie.
And oh my gosh. Jeremy Camp for sure saw Star Is Born.
Yes!
And he was like, give me the bronzer. Give me the rock star treatment.
Give me the bronzer and free
amazing.
My soul.
Yeah, give me a hat. Give me a weird haircut.
Yeah.
Like this is what I want to be like.
I know.
It's time to let the old ways die.
Except make sure she has no talent and nothing to contribute to
yeah, it's all about
my
world.
She's
at
the
all.
One that dies, not me. Not me. I mean, this movie, in a lot of ways, and we talk, like, you know... it's a tricky thing because we're talking about real people now, too.
Yes.
Right.
I feel, it is quite sad.
But
we can talk about them as characters.
We can talk about them as characters, but I think the feeling, Caroline, that you and I at least had after we finished the movie, I would describe in the following noise. Oh.
Ugh.
Oh. In that, like, there's, like, really... Easy to call out things that are like fundamentally rotten in Christian culture as far as like racism or misogyny or homophobia goes. And then there's stuff that's like ideology that's so threaded through faith and tradition that it feels a little more amorphous to get your arms around. And this movie kind of defines a little bit more specifically. And one of those, I think you can find crystallized in one of the ideas in Melissa's journal as she leaves it behind, which is the line, suffering doesn't destroy faith, it refines it. And that, you know, even I think about that Colbert quote where he's quoting someone else, the punishments of God are gifts.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, and that's one thing is like a personal relationship and coping mechanism thing and something for your like day-to-day life. And it's quite a different thing when it is brand extension and marketing for your own mythology
yeah.
as a Christian yeah. rock star. So yeah. it's quite a different thing. And who, like, I'm not even saying like it's liable and none of this happened or anything like that. Like that aside, but I think even in the most controlled circumstances of like Jeremy Camp's thumbprint being all over this movie and the Irwin brothers being super conservative Christian people that want people to know the gospel, the idea essentially that like the loss of life is an acceptable sacrificial lamb if even just one person comes to know Jesus is disgusting, I think, in
yeah.
a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's very minimizing to a lot of people's grief and pain.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's creating a whole new class of martyrs, you know, that like are just supposed to accept that this is the fair and good thing of God, that they have been selected for like a life of misery, basically, so that other people believe in God. And like, that's a trade-off that they're willing to take because they believe God loves them and like wants them to do that. But it's like especially insidious when it's like, and it was also really cool because otherwise we wouldn't have Jeremy Camp's music.
Yeah. That's what I was sort of like when I was watching this. I watched it this morning and you know, I haven't watched any Christian movies. I guess I have seen The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but I...
Boom, you're a Christian now. Aslan saved you, dude.
Oh, shit. I guess that did radicalize me. So I haven't seen, many sort of like overtly Christian movies. So when I got to the end of this thing, I was like, what were they trying to tell me? Because I was sort of like this, if that's the message, that's kind of scuzzy. I just wasn't sure, like, if I don't think they're all this way. Certainly, I'm sure there are some that are like, well, you know what, that was something good to take from that. I'll take it. But this, I was just sort of like, this is kind of sad, bleak overall.
Yeah, and to quickly summarize the movie, to contextualize it for anyone that hasn't seen it and doesn't care about watching it, it's based on the true story and the true events of Jeremy Camp meeting his wife Melissa in college when they are like children. I mean, I actually didn't look up how young they are, but I'm sure they were super duper young.
I mean, they were like 19 at the oldest, probably.
Jeremy Camp, 1978, 88, 98. Yeah, so he was like 21 or 20 when they got married, essentially. So they started a romance, and then she was diagnosed with cancer and then passed away shortly after their marriage. And the movie tells the story of like the budding romance and stuff, and then how her faith worked out in that relationship, but also how her death and her courage and her faith in the face of death spurred Jeremy on to write great songs and make great music and pick that guitar back up. At one point in the movie, he does angrily break his guitar in a scene out of Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. And then there is like a journal entry in there where she's like, hey, it's me from the grave. Do good music for Jesus. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I should be a rock star. And this even continues to the very end where there is a sort of epilogue scene in which Jeremy Camp is playing a song that's based on Melissa's life. And then who should see him but his second and current wife in the crowd, and then is compelled to pursue him romantically. Not because of him, not because of how cool he is or because of his music,
no,
but because of Melissa's story. And that's why. And that's why it's not strange or weird. And then it does cut to an actual epilogue of like the actual real life footage of the family together as they are now. It's I would be curious as to what Melissa's family, who's still family and her survivors, think of all this stuff, because even to me, and again, I don't want to be negative about any of this stuff. I think it's more fun and more optimistic to be kind of like hopeful and look for this stuff. But it did feel like crass marketing and branding, the way it worked itself out in the movie. And even for all the like kind of like dumb Christian movie things, or like bad production value, or weird acting, or not good script, or Shania Twain doing a Roseanne impression.
Doing something. Yeah.
around the table. Like at the core of it is still that thing that is like very difficult to get around and surmount.
The thing too that at first was like seemed, I don't know, like a small thing, and then just slowly like kept building into this bigger and bigger snowball, was also, you see, like, if Jeremy Camp had a big hand in telling her story or like doing this movie, the way he saw her is also a big bummer to me too, because like she's just a cheerleader. Like all she does, the reason he likes her, she smiles and watches him play music and cries. Like she, that's all, like, so many of the shots are just her like just smiling and crying and smiling and like so in awe of him and in love, and like it's over and over. There's like I think 3 or 4 scenes where she just is watching him singing and is just filled with ecstasy.
Is sort of like positioned in this movie to be his sort of like prize, you know, like even like when she's ailing, he like wheels her out. And like it's sort of like, ta-da!
Look at this.
Yeah,
and then it proposed to her like immediately walking out of the hospital.
Yeah, it's sort of.
She has no friends. We don't even know what she was going to school for. We know that she likes stars.
Yeah,
and beyond that, she's just the girl. She's just a princess. Like she is a person that he transferred from her father to him.
Mm-hmm.
By wooing her and
our father,
pushing her out of her boundaries and making her date him, basically, is like what happened. Yeah. Oh, and claiming her from the other weird promise that she had to that other worship musician.
Oh, Jean-Luc, who was a guy in real life. I thought this was an invention, but this is a real-life person.
It was weird enough to be like, oh, this is a real situation. So it just, that really bothered me, too. It was like, if you're going to make a tribute and make this, this like epic about how your wife was so amazing and she had a horrible illness that she like retained this incredible message for everyone to hear. Like, show her life. Don't show just when you met her and dated her and won her and then lost her. Yes. You know, like, that's not the story then. Like, tell about what she was going to do and what her friends thought about it and how her family felt about it. Like, all those things, you know?
Yeah, this is essentially the evangelical equivalent of what's called fridging in a lot of pop culture and comic books. Like, you're familiar with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
I think I've heard this term.
So for any listener that may not be aware, the idea of fridging, and I think it comes from, does it come from a Deadpool comic or some comic book? But it's essentially like the hero of the story comes home and his girlfriend or wife is chopped up and in a fridge. And so that spurs him on to violent action.
Jesus.
And
yeah.
It's horrifying.
And spurs him on to like, okay, now I'm going to do the hero's journey with this rage I have in me, which John Wick graciously circumvents by making it a dog instead of a lady.
Yes.
Which I thought,
I thought his house got burned down with his wife in it or something too.
No.
A different
his
Keanu Reeves
his
movie.
Wife passed away of cancer in the movie, and then it's
yes.
it's the guys who broke in, and then they shot his little puppy.
Well, there
and
you
then
go.
They took his car and they killed his dog. And those are the two biggest mistakes you can make if you're trying to oppose John Wick.
Yeah.
I'll say. But
because the dog was a gift from the wife. So that's why it
was right. It was
extra.
Like the last memory. It was like part.
Okay,
of
so it is kind of about his fridged wife a little bit.
There's a totally link there, but it
she's
but
in the she's in the mini fridge. It's a mini fridge.
Stop minimizing John Wick's wife.
I'm sorry. All right, second service next week. We're gonna do a deep dive on John Wick's on Mrs. Wick.
I'd happily come back for a John Wick episode.
Yeah, but it is totally like she is there to give him. Like purpose, I think almost to give him like significance, like a deep thing to write about. That's a very cynical look too, but it just feels like that with the
story. I know, and again, this isn't like we're saying this is what's happening. It's like this is how it feels to us as viewers.
That was how thin her character was,
right? And because the whole thing is like it's her story, it's her faith. We need to tell people about her. And yeah, like not even like the more radical idea of okay, what if she's the main character and Jeremy Camp's a supporting character, and then it's about how they like intersect, or even more of a two-hander. Or 6 minutes of interior life with her family that has nothing to do with Mr.
Yeah,
Camp.
I was just thinking, like, the only scene where she's, like, by herself, or from her perspective, I think is when she's crying about, like, her diagnosis in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. Yeah.
And then when she breaks the jar, she's trying to open the jar.
Oh, yes, in the jar scene. That's right. You know what? That actually really did flesh out a lot of her character, so I take it back.
Now I wish the jar had been a runner in the whole movie, and like she had like she got like she placed in state finals
jar
for jar
nemesis.
Opening Olympics and,
yeah
like,
and then you sort of just see like the degradation of it, like this is how you know that the stakes are pretty high because she can't get it. Yeah,
that'd be a perfect yeah. runner in the
other
movie.
Way that you know it is a Christian movie is she's promising to take the year to not get distracted, aka date anybody.
Yes, this is a thing that a lot of Christian women say, and Christian men say,
and men. I feel like it was mostly men in my life that did this.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That may actually be right.
Like, but girls were a distraction, and like romance was distraction because you're getting too horny instead of reading the Bible and thinking about God and focusing on like yourself growth.
Now it's like, distract me, daddy. I'm down for
yeah.
it.
Please.
I was about to say, I've been distracted.
So yeah, that's the basic gist of the movie. But the takeaway, I think KJ has a terrific voice. I think his vocal performance is pretty good.
Really?
So
nice
that was
voice.
Him. That was him
really
singing
smooth.
Those words.
That was for real him. Yeah.
Okay, then he was he was very good.
Yeah.
The songs were nice.
He did not sound like Emma Watson by way of T-Pain, a la Beauty and the Beast.
No. Yeah, no, it felt real. I wish his hair had gotten a less crusty treatment.
No
but
one.
Beyond that, he looked great.
We talked about this yesterday. No one in the world knows what KJ Apa's hair looks like for real.
Really?
Like,
is.
Oh, natural color. What
natural
could it
texture.
Be? He spent however many years dyeing it for his television show. And it is weird to think, by the way, that out of all the people in the cast, he is the one with the most, like, probably capital and star power. Like, Shania Twain has the most money, for sure. But he's probably the one with the most cachet. It's just interesting how, like, celebrity works now, where it's like...
What do you guys think of him, like, in this movie? Because looking back, I don't know if I even really noticed him, to be honest. Like, he wasn't bad, but...
He's serviceable. He's a CW actor. He's like...
Yeah, like, how did you feel about the way he portrayed Jeremy? Did you believe him?
Well, there was... I still believe him, but I will say there was quite a gap between the way KJ looks and then when we did look up... Wait, I'm going to find those pictures.
Oh, wow.
This is Jeremy Kidd. This is what he looks like.
Yeah, that's a very 2000s look for sure.
Ugh. They really did a service by not matching his actual look back then.
Yeah.
He has a soul patch. And listeners, I don't know what you call what he's got there, but I'd maybe say a long, skinny sideburn that goes just to the chin and then stops.
He looks like a ski bully.
Like a jawline.
Yeah,
I know. He looks like...
It's disgusting. And Melissa is beautiful.
Yes, just a gorgeous. Doll.
She's so cute.
He sort of looks more normal now, I guess.
Of course, yes.
Besides the
Gumby head.
Ailment. Yeah.
So what do you mean by this? Gumby head.
Gumby and Pokey.
Yep, I see it.
Yeah, when it just kind of like goes off into a corner.
Yeah, do you think do you think that's a plug situation?
I don't know.
I think that's his hair. He's a nice looking fella.
I would assume he's a handsome guy. Hair. Yeah. Him and his wife seem sweet together. She also a former CCM musician. She was the lead singer of a band called the Benjamin Gate. Andrean
Which is
Camp.
Crazy.
Yeah. So
when they introduce her in the movie again, we don't know anything about her except that she was moved by Jeremy.
It just feels like so condescending. Where it's like your first conversation was not I heard about Melissa. Like, it was probably about something else. And she probably felt all the same way about Melissa and was touched in that way. Whatever. But, like, the idea that you're just, like, giving yourself such a pet. It's just, like, so baldly hagiographic in its function. It's so strange. It's just weird.
Well, and even in the movie, like, he was doing it before she died, too. Like, he would ask her to stand up and tell everybody about her diagnosis and pray for her. And he would wheel her out on stage and make everyone pray for her. And, like, maybe she was fine with it, but it also was, like, even then, that feels like kind of a gross way to, like, exploit your wife and her situation.
Yeah, I think so. And it's I don't know if anyone who's still living should have control over their own biopic. You know what I mean? Like Rocket Man is a better movie if Elton John is dead.
Yeah.
That said, Bohemian Rhapsody would still suck shit either way, as we found out. But like anytime they're alive,
we don't know if Freddie would have been in the edit room and been like, this is too many edits.
cut.
Yeah, one too many.
He could have been in there.
He would have saved that.
One of the most offensive Oscar wins in modern history is best editing for Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, unreal. Unreal stuff. So I read a criticism or a review from David Ehrlich at the Wire, at IndieWire publication online. He's like a really good film writer, very prolific on Letterboxd, and I enjoy reading his stuff. One point he made that I thought was very funny was that the kind of like stock Manic Pixie Dream Girl stuff, like where she'd be hung up on some sort of specifics of like, I don't know, I just like yelling into trash cans or whatever it was in Garden State, is just replaced by an awe and wonder of the of God, of her heavenly creator. Like,
so true.
Look at these galaxies and stars.
That's her weird little hobby.
Mm-hmm. And she's just like amazed by the Lord in that sense.
Yeah, I did like that she liked stars. I thought that was kind of cool when she was schooling him. But maybe that's just the only thing that I had to hang on is like a personality that she had. So I was like, well,
I liked
cool.
that scene.
It was pretty.
Yeah.
And then it kind of became that whole metaphor of how like some stars shine brighter, but those are the ones that die first, but they provide warmth for us or something. Or
yeah.
They explode into more stars. So it's all good.
She almost then said, like me.
And then she goes,
and
just points to herself.
He's got two thumbs and is kind of a supernova.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked about on this show before, Matt, on similar movies where it's about Christian getting sick and then like then they got better and the doctors couldn't even explain why. They couldn't understand. And always the kind of desire with that stuff is like it's so pat the way it works in those movies of like they were on the edge of death and then something happened that was inexplicable. And so it must have been the Lord. And what we've said in those episodes covering those movies is always like, wouldn't it be cool to see a movie where like someone gets sick, but then they pass away and then you have to interrogate what faith actually means and looks like in those sort of circumstances.
Yeah.
We got like, what we wished for.
What's that?
We got what we wished for.
Well, we got what we wished for, but it's it just feels like, it still feels like a dishonest proposition.
Yeah.
Because it's just fuel for the fire of someone's career. And then you cut to like him in an arena surrounded by all these cell phone lights to like 20,000 people. And it's like, I think Caroline did make the joke during the closing montage with the real life family that they would just like go.
Oh, that weird commercial?
Like, yes!
Where it's like, they're look at their family of five. Look at how much they're thriving. Which just felt kind of mean.
I think Caroline joked that the last shot should be them dancing on Melissa's grave.
I mean, they might as well have.
Because it's essentially what it feels like.
Throwing dollars in the air saying, thanks, babe.
Yeah, like as respectfully as possible. It's just like, I can't think of anything comparable to that. Like as far as like non-fiction goes. Fiction stuff, it happens all the time where it's like the dead woman, it's good that she's dead because it made a man great, but like
I wish I knew
she was an angel and perfect and like complicated.
I guess I wish I knew if, you know, Melissa's family was compensated for her life rights, you know, if like if there was some sort of like maybe donation made in her name or something at the very least. Like I just don't know how something like that's handled, but if there was not even a conversation about it, then
well, Matt, I think you missed the end. There was a website that prompted you to have a discussion.
Yes, the website.
That's in the way a gift.
I forgot about the website. How could I be so crass to forget about the website?
Yeah, this wasn't a money-making endeavor. This was an educational tool.
I'll be back.
What was the website? I forget where it referred us to.
I didn't write it down.
That was very funny to me.
Grieving hotline too.
Anything else we want to cover before we rate this movie? Any other like scenes or music did we want to explore? We didn't even talk about the music in it at all.
I mean, the music is like, I mean, not something that I would listen to, but I didn't hate hearing any of the songs in the I wasn't bothered by any of it. But they also, I think the main thing that I would say about this movie is that like it for me was like very just sort of like I didn't care, obviously I'm like very like saddened to know about this thing that happened in real life, but like the whole thing is very, it felt very flat to me. Like I could not get invested at all, and it's, I don't know if it was because of like the performances or if just like maybe the way the story was told, but I just felt like I didn't have a way in, unfortunately.
Well, because it's like you weirdly undermine the stakes of it if it's an unfortunate parallel to some cultural conversation right now where you undermine the stakes of death if it's like, well, death isn't our, you know, that's not the final destination. There's somewhere we're going to. It kind of robs you of grief in that sense where it's like, hey, don't worry. It's actually fine that she died because it worked out. And
'cause even the moment when it happens, you know, I'm used to crying in movies. I'll cry at anything. I was sort of just watching it and was just sort of like, yeah, I guess that's where we're at in the story, isn't it? Like it was sad, but I wasn't like, I guess I wasn't moved, unfortunately. And that's not to say the story isn't moving. The way the story was told was not, I mean, I'm talking about it as a movie, of course, not like as like a, they're telling me
the actual
thing.
I know what you
mean.
Yeah. I guess it felt like their relationship, there wasn't anything I really related to very much or like found universal. It just felt like teenagers and their understanding of love and like a lot of all the miscommunication and stuff.
And doing the worm in a library
that kinda,
and
dancing around. And then people that like sort of dove into a big commitment that maybe they wouldn't have, you know, or like who knows if it had time to mature or whatever. And so, yeah, it felt like when she passed, it was, you know, in A Walk to Remember.
I was just about to say.
Sad.
What, I was just about to say, Caroline.
It's super sad when she dies because you spent a lot of time figuring out what they like about each other and what draws them. But all that you know in Jeremy Camp's story is he likes that she's pretty when she's worshiping. Like, that's the first thing that draws her. And then I think he likes that she's, like, resistant to dating him.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't know what there is. I guess, yeah, her wonder of God is.
It just, yeah, there's no like romance in their relationship. It's like a very like, I mean, obviously they're not that every movie has to have like sex in it, but it's like, it was a very sexless like thing. There's like, I didn't feel like they were attracted to each other like at all. It was very, just like very, like, I don't know. And they've worked together before, these two actors, but I don't know if that was like the restriction of the.
When you cast the leads of A Dog's Purpose, you're signing yourself up for a sexy time, but apparently not.
I was trying to get all horned up watching this thing, and it didn't happen.
I want to see tension. I want to see moisture.
Yeah. Okay, rank the brothers, the Safdie brothers, the Coen brothers, the Irwin brothers.
Okay.
And the Cristiano brothers, right?
And the Russo brothers.
Okay, there's a lot of brothers.
Irwin's at the top.
Irwin's at the top, huh? I mean, I don't want to disagree with you because I'm having so much fun. But I think I got to go.
Don't, Matt.
Okay, then you're right. It's obviously the Irwin brothers.
Yeah.
It's Irwin's, then the Safdies, then the Russos. The Coens are up. Oh, see, this is hard. This is actually quite hard.
Brothers making movies.
Cat is so cute.
They usually work out.
Yeah, my cat's wandering around because she's
wrapped around Matt's head.
Been neglected. So this cute chunk over here.
What's this kitty's name?
This cat's name is Hurley, named after Hugo Reyes
from Lost.
Yes. Yeah.
Aww.
Well, you have to go back.
Not the cool surf brand.
Not the cool surf brand, nor the Weezer's eighth album.
Asshole directly.
Yeah, just right in my face. Just a full view. I could see out its mouth.
You know what? There on the guys on the soundtrack for this movie, there are just dialogue tracks, and I'm very curious what they thought to. This is such an old school move to just like have a track dedicated to dialogue. I want to see what they chose for.
Maybe her letter.
That was a really nice song.
I'm sorry.
You're great.
Yeah, I'm really sorry.
I've been learning a new song, just the chorus.
Oh, this was rough.
Hell yeah!
Can I break you?
Sure.
I love you, I love you, I love you. I love you, I love you, I love you.
This isn't a song.
Is that about God?
I forgot.
Not entirely. Melissa.
You know someone's mature and ready for a relationship when that's how they say they love someone.
Good grief.
Time.
I will say this is like a funny call out of this strain of Christian music where it's like God or girlfriend. And this is Jeremy Camp saying like,
that's true.
Yeah, I wrote all these worship songs about a hot girl in college that I wanted to marry. It's not about God at all, but yeah, lift your hands and stuff and do all the same. I'd never seen anyone underline it so specifically before.
Yeah. I will say I was really moved and sad in the scene where she wakes up from like sleeping in the hospital after mm-hmm. she's already relapsed and is like, I'm cured, I'm done, it worked, the
brutal
miracle happened.
Awful.
That truly made me very sad.
That was a sad
so
that
I
was
guess
a sad
it did
scene.
Affect me in a big way. Because she's like, I think just right at the tail end of her short life. And she's waking him up and telling him, you're right, I'm healed. Like I believed, it's a miracle. God did it. And it that was pretty crushing. I feel like that was
a sad moment.
Looking back now, I'm like, that was a pretty, like painful scene, but also in the vein of kind of like upending our expectations that like she will get healed and it's a miracle and that's so much more powerful. it is a really sad phenomenon to think about all the Christians who like think they're going to get the miracle and get mm-hmm. the cure, and they even believe it for a moment and then it's taken. And,
yeah.
and that is a like extremely sad and brutal and reality.
Yeah. That's awful.
They did pretty well at that mm-hmm. moment, I guess.
So many little things they could have done to make the movie a little more like reverent or respectful. Even like I think about for the ending montage of like, here's Jeremy thriving, full of life in his adult age,
yeah.
where it's like, you could have just made that text and just been like,
yes,
Jeremy put out some albums and remarried eventually or something.
Took a couple years grieve his sweet wife that he just made a tribute to.
Make it clips of her. Like, make it clips of like old
home
like,
videos.
Yes, yeah, home videos of Melissa.
That's such a good point. That really did show their ass of like who they thought the story was really about at the end of the day. It was like, look at what Jeremy is doing now.
It was like, it was like Steve Jobs doing a presentation of like the new iPhone, the new wife.
With their new wife and their three new children, like, oh yeah, that was gross. That felt really bad. Like, I want him to be happy and live his life.
Of course, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. Like,
as like a parade that's the jubilant end to Melissa's life.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So crazy.
Nasty, not cool.
I wonder if they put her family, like, gave her sister a scene here and there as like a consolation to Melissa's family, her real family, basically, is like, see.
She existed outside of this.
She
man's.
Is a person. Yeah.
Oh,
she
and
was a daughter and a sister.
Her and
to a wife.
I know. Her dreams too. When they were talking in the museum of like, I want to do something big and vague and good and just like that's
and
her whole
adaptable to whatever Jeremy wants to do.
Unreal. Okay, well let's rate the movie. You know how this works, Matt. We're gonna give it a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or good put it to purgatory. Holy toast, that's a thumbs up. We're gonna send Jeremy and everyone all the way to heaven. Or holy roast. I still
or
believe
Melissa can say, what the fuck?
Where she can be like, holy roast, we send them to hell. Thumbs down. Or if we're not sure, we're a little torn, we can send them to the space between. And we start with Caroline.
I'll start with the good. You know, like, it was a competent film, as Kevin likes to say. It was well filmed. It looked good. You know, it was shot right, which is the bar, actually, for a lot of Christian movies. It's the first one they have to jump. it felt like an even more exploitative Walk to Remember somehow. And I will give it a roast for that reason, for all that said. And I just, again, Melissa, you deserved better. I'm so sorry. Your first husband was a dingus who got way famous off of your coattails. That was not right.
All right. That's fair. We turn to Matt.
Because I guess I haven't seen one of these movies before, and that I guess I was surprised that I was able to watch the whole thing. Like, I was like, oh, that wasn't as like bad as I was like considering it to be, like, from what I know of like the Kirk Cameron canon, or, you know.
Yeah.
They're evolving.
They
I was
are.
Like, this is like, no, that's what I was sort of like, oh, this is like a real movie. Like, it's a mm-hmm. movie that just sort of happens to like be Christian. Mm-hmm. And so that, I mean, it wasn't that the Christian elements to me, like, as a non-secular moviegoer, weren't distracting enough to take me out of it. Like, do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I was sort of like, oh, like, I'll just watch this thing, and, like, every now and then I'll be like, oh, yeah, God. And like, sure.
Yeah, it's pretty light.
But, you know, Melissa was done terribly wrong in this transaction of I guess, life. And one, I guess in real life, too, in the depiction. So I got to give it a roast because, I think they could have handled it with a little more reverence. Even me saying, you know, as I was dunking on this movie the entire time, I would be a little nicer to this dead person. But, you know, they didn't, I don't think they told her story the way that if a family member of mine passed away and they were in a movie about it, I would appreciate it. So that's a roast.
I have to give it a roast too. I think this is weirdly one of the most evil movies we've ever talked about on the show. I think the heart of this movie is very dark and very sad. And for a conservative Christian base that would like to believe they're pro-life, this is a very, very devaluing to people's human lives. And it's very sad and it sucks. Competently shot, though. But it's just one of those things of, I feel like this kind of flippancy about the value of human life is such an easy value to adopt subliminally and subconsciously over time. And I think even we're still unpacking that now. But movies like this, where it doesn't feel flagrantly weird or flagrantly like right wing or conservative or bad in the ways that we would identify, I think this stuff is like darker and more insidious than any of that stuff can ever be, because it looks innocent and it's really not. But we're not the final word. Go to @ChristianFunPod on Twitter and give it a roast or toast yourself. Get the heck out there and
Pokemon go to the polls,
ballers.
I swear to God, if you guys give this a toast in that poll, coming for your ass. I'm gonna hack Twitter and figure out who voted what.
Caroline's gonna, for the first time ever, be able to see who votes on an anonymous poll. She will come.
Should do them on Instagram so I can see who votes.
You can actually see on Instagram. Yeah, we should do that.
Very fun.
All right, Matt, Caroline, we're dimming the lights. We're lighting the candles in our respective homes at a safe distance. And we're here to enter into a more worshipful space. We're here to lift our hands up, as there were so many shots of people doing the same in this movie. And give it up to our one true God, cinema. Just kidding. Lord Jesus Christ. And we're not here to promote ourselves or our projects. We're here to lift them up. And we start with Caroline.
I just finished listening to a podcast today that I really enjoyed. I'm going to start with my lift ups, actually. It was called Rabbit Hole. And maybe you have someone you know or a family member or maybe even yourself that has gone down the internet rabbit hole and has some pretty fringe beliefs at this point. I feel like this podcast did a good job of like humanizing that and not making it sympathetic, but sort of like helping you understand the bridges that like it takes to someone to get there. And also like the way they can come back too. So that was a really cool podcast. And then I'm also watching Atlanta right now, which is a great show. It's just shocking and very funny. And I hate to say it, but it's timely. It's a good show. I'd highly recommend it. And you can find me at Caroline's Parts.
Thank you, Caroline. We turn to Matt.
Great. Well, I guess two things that I'll lift up. You know, I was talking to you guys before we started about Spike Lee's new movie, The Five Bloods, and it's like a movie that I truly can't stop thinking about. I was just blown away by this thing. Also, like a very relevant movie in its way, and you know, I was just blown away by how good it was. And just a fun fact about the movie, that there are flashback scenes where the actors are not de-aged, and it was because Spike Lee was not given the same amount of money that Martin Scorsese says he was given from Netflix.
Oh my God.
So watch this movie. I do think it's one, it's shorter than The Irishman. Two, I think it's a better movie than The Irishman, even though I also liked The Irishman. But check it out. I liked that a lot. Check that out. And I'm also playing The Last of Us 2, which people...
Is it hard? Are you crying your brains out playing it?
It's, you know, I'm playing on an easy setting because the challenge of gaming is not why I play. It's more of just like to experience the story. Mm-hmm. And I'm not done with this thing, but I'm enjoying it so far. And I see a lot of people online who are seem to hate it because the protagonist is a lesbian, and so I think that's a strange reason to dislike a game. But it's also, I think, a very good game. It's very interesting. The first one is incredible, and so I'm enjoying the second one so far. I haven't finished it, so we'll see where I land on the other side of that, but I'm enjoying it right now.
Hey, that's great. Thanks, Matt.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And wait, and people can listen to you on How Did This Get Played and follow you where?
That's right. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Matt Apodaca. And I produce How Did This Get Played. You can hear me on there. I do all sorts of other stuff. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad you guys listen. That's so nice.
And what's your friend code? Just kidding.
You can't dox that.
But do you know it by heart? Real question. Do you know it by
heart? I don't know it by heart, but I have it saved in a note so I don't have to.
Same. Yeah. I know. It's like after the pandemic, it became our credit card number, essentially. Well, you should probably know it, but don't put in your notes if you can. Ah, you can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter. Ah, why'd I start it with that? That's like Taron Killam to Brad Pitt. Love that. You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. You know, what do I have to lift up? Nothing. I got nothing. I don't care about culture. No. Make, you know what? Go out there and make your own choices. Don't listen to me.
Yeah.
There's so much. Hey, you don't
I
say
agree.
That. No. No, that's mean now. I mean, I don't know. I could lift up. Who'd be good to lift up right now? Bill Simmons? The Ringer? Just kidding. I'll lift up frickin'. Oh, no one. Just go out and make your own choices. You can follow my letterbox if you
want
to.
Kevin lifts up TikTok this week.
Kevin lifts up TikTok. Any user that Caroline sends me and I do laugh at their TikToks, I'll lift that person up. And you can lift this up at Christian Fun Pod on social everywhere. And if you go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun, you can get more good Christian fun. Every Friday, we do a second service. Matt was on our second service a couple weeks ago for a hot sec. So that was nice and fun. Thank you for your contribution,
that was a
treat. Matt. Yes.
Thank you.
And then you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Every review you leave, we donate $1 to charity. And this month's charity is the Black Lives Matter movement in all its forms. Matt, thank you so much for joining us on the show, buddy.
Thank you both so much for having me. You know, I was saying it up top, but it was a true delight to spend some time with you guys and your sweet faces. Thank you for having me.
You too, buddy.
Oh,
what a nice time.
I was looking forward to it, too.
I know. Man. I wish we could hang right now if it wasn't a death risk.
I know. We could go get cones or something.
Oh, yeah. That'd be so fun. Or you could come over for Smash Bros. Or something.
Let's play some games.
I know. We'll do it. Okay, and there's nothing left to say except for an all of Pont's people said, Amen. Now, I think it's time we go out with the titular song from the movie.
Maybe it's time to let the old ways die.
Wait, did you say...
Scattered words and empty thoughts.
The old ways be not believing that death is good. Good grief. All right, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
But it's now that I feel your grace fall.
That was a HeadGum podcast.